If culture is downstream from religion and politics is downstream from culture, what does that say about us as a society? And where do Christians fit in the picture? We'll talk about that this week on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm your host here on Principles and Policies. And before we get into the topic today, you may be able to tell from my intro music, the incomparable Frank Sinatra singing My Way. The words are rather poignant. This is our next to last, our penultimate program here on WLRY. WLRY, if you listen to Talk of the Town on Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, Mike O'Reilly interviewed me. And Mike O'Reilly and I had a standing thing on the third Thursday of the month at 8 o'clock in the morning. I would come on and talk with Mike. And sometimes Mike and I would get so far into the conversation, he'd hold me over. Because normally it was half an hour. For a while, we were only 15 minutes when Barry was around. For a time, we got closed out to 15 minutes, which was fine. But Mike always found that unsatisfactory because he would always ask a question that we couldn't possibly get answered in 15 minutes. That's the problem with modern thing. You know, we tend to think in terms of sound bites. Well, there are things that just can't be done in a sound bite. In fact, there are things that can't be done necessarily in a multi-week class. However, Mike interviewed me on Thursday, and he explained that the radio station on January 31st goes silent for a time, and then it comes back as a different Christian radio station. The frequency has been purchased by another Christian radio station. And so I told Mike, I said, you know, what I really loved about WLRY, I still love it, and I will love it until December 28th, when is our last program is. And by the way, this is our program for December 21st, 2024. It's being recorded on December 20th, 2024. I love the fact that WLRY allowed people like Barry Sheets and I the opportunity to be on a Christian radio station where we didn't necessarily fit the mold. We are a teaching ministry in a parachurch organization. I know a lot of churches have teaching ministries from regular church organizations, and that's fine. I use a lot of that material. I'm a big fan of R.C. Sproul, who, of course, died, I think, the seventh anniversary of his death just passed. That doesn't mean his teaching isn't still relevant. It's extremely relevant. All his teachings are incredibly profound and deeply informative. Now, go to ligonier.org to see the legacy of R.C. Sproul and the people surrounding him. We have used a lot of ligonier.org's materials in our Sunday school class. We just finished a church history class from Robert Godfrey, who's one of the people in the Ligonier in R.C. Sproul's orbit. Okay, that being said, I find myself availing myself of a lot of ministry on the radio, and WLRY did that. But they also allowed people like Barry Sheets and I, again, as I mentioned, my late broadcast partner, they allowed a lot of people like us. There are other people. In fact, Mike brought up several people who I am very closely acquainted with, and some who I have been acquainted with in the past. Many of them have left this realm and gone on to their reward. He mentioned Bruce Purdy. Bruce Purdy and I served in the Institute for Principled Policy together when there was such a thing as the Institute for Principled Policy. Bruce Purdy was a secretary of the Institute for Principled Policy, and he was very close friends with Barry Sheets. And Bruce was a great guy. Bruce was a handyman, and he helped me remodel my barn into an office and a warehouse. And as a handyman, he'd come down here, we'd get together, he would do things. Sometimes he would say, I'm not sure I want to do that, and he'd dig in, and he'd get it done, and he goes, well, I guess that wasn't so bad. Bruce was a funny guy. He was a great guy. He was an ordained Reformed Baptist pastor. He was not pastoring at the time of his passing. He was doing his handyman duties, but he had been a Reformed Baptist pastor. So he was a great guy that was on WLRY. And David Dobenmeyer, and it turns out Barry Sheets and I met in a meeting of the Minutemen United, if you've never heard of that. Dave Dobenmeyer, Coach Dave, was one of the founders. He was the spark plug, the head of the Minutemen United. And Barry Sheets and I met at a meeting of that. And we were members of the Minutemen United for quite some time. And so I know Dave Dobenmeyer, but I knew him before that because I went to high school in Hebron, Ohio, just outside Hebron, at Lakewood High School. Many people in the WLRY listening area know where Lakewood High School is. I graduated from there. And the Dobenmeyers lived in Hebron. My dad owned the drugstore pharmacy there in Hebron, and also one in Millersport, Ohio, another town in the listening area, and for many years. And the Dobenmeyers lived in town, and I went to high school now with Dave's younger brother, and he actually graduated 2 years after I did with my brother. He was my brother's age. My brother and I would go down there and go to the Dobenmeyer house. We'd ride our bikes into town and go visit Bill, and so I knew Dave's brothers and his sister. And so we were family acquaintances for many, many, many years. And the other name that came up that Mike brought up was Mark Harrington from used to be the Center for Bioethical Reformed. And the group, he broke off and did his own thing. It's called Created Equal. You may not know what that's about. They do abortion education. He had a box truck that had pictures of the aborted babies on there as an educational tool. He would go drive around places in public where it had an impact. And what it did was very often it would shock people into thinking about what abortion is. Abortion is the ending of a human life through probably the most barbaric means you can think of. People often find themselves shocked to find out execution methods of the past. Being drawn and quartered, a truly ugly method for being executed for treason that was practiced in England. Basically, you were hanged by the neck until you were unconscious. You were brought down, slapped awakened, and then you were disemboweled, and your entrails were burned in front of you, and then you were cut up into pieces after you were dead, and into four pieces, quartering. And your pieces were then sent to different parts of the kingdom as a demonstration. And generally, your head was cut off and put on a pike. I'm sorry if that sounds a little rough to you. Let me tell you that this does not hold a candle to the death methods of abortion. And these are live human beings. You may dispute that if you wish. You will get nowhere with me. I have a degree in biochemistry. You cannot convince me that that is not a human being. It is a human being. It's not fully developed. And the fact is that you have to ask yourself the question, if it's okay to mutilate, cut and burn and dismember a human being, at what point does it become not okay? Is it after they've got arms and legs and head and eyes and ears? Is it when they have a heartbeat, or is it at the two-cell stage when it's dividing up, becoming a person? I can tell you that this is a profound question for me because I have a grandson who is, and many of you do as well, who have developmental issues, who have things that make them different. And some people would say make their life not worth living, or they have profound developmental issues. Maybe they should have been aborted in the womb. I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I am so happy when I see my Down syndrome grandson because he is the happiest little guy in the world. Those of you who have Down syndrome, children, grandchildren, cousins, whatever, they are the happiest people in the world. Always a smile, Now, he he has antics that he does that we always laugh about. It's one of the things that you expect. And so far, he's delayed in developing his verbal skills. But as soon as he starts talking, he will be doing just fine. Would we have rather aborted him than take on the expense and the difficulty in dealing with a Down syndrome child? No. No. He is a precious blessing in our life. That's the way that we should be viewing even children who come severely damaged. There are all kinds of weird syndromes that come in, extra chromosomes, all kinds of things that happen. Do those children deserve to live? And the answer is they deserve to live for as long as God gives them life. And that's where we fall apart as a society. And that's what Mark Harrington was teaching, is teaching. He continues to teach this. Mark does great work in doing abortion education, and he was on the radio station for a number of years. This is what I say. Thanks to God and to Rick Finke, who had the vision to have WLRY and have it run programs that weren't necessarily in the mold. Not necessarily church pastors teaching from the Bible, an extremely important part, if not the most important part of on-air ministry, is teachers teaching from the Bible for those who are looking for guidance on the teaching of God on different things. Expositional preaching, if you will. For instance, my church, and by the way, I will let everybody know, we have our Sunday service at Providence Presbyterian Church, OPC, Orthodox Presbyterian Church, in Pataskala, Ohio, 7095 Summit Road. I am an elder there. Our Sunday school starts at 9:45, and our worship service starts at 11. Again, 7095 Summit Road in Pataskala. We are a very conservative Presbyterian church. People don't know there is such a creature. Yes, there are a couple of Presbyterian denominations that are very conservative. Some of them not so much. The Orthodox Presbyterian Church as a denomination, very, very conservative. Barry Sheets was a PCA elder. I am an OPC elder. Very similar job descriptions, very similar denominations, except that PCA has a broader runs the gamut from what you would call theological moderates to theological conservatives. That's partly why I'm in the OPC. I'm theologically very conservative. Okay, that being said, come join us on Sunday for our morning service. Again, Providence Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Pataskala. Sunday school at 9:45. We're studying Galatians, and service at 11. And we do have a Christmas Eve service, 7 o'clock at 7095 Summit Road, Pataskala, or Providence Orthodox Presbyterian Church, 7 p.m., our Christmas Eve service. And it will simply be a short service, but it will be a service. And we invite you to come and join us for that. Now, as WLRY closes, so must our radio show. That doesn't mean we will stop. I have a website that I'm trying to fix. Those of you know about it, it's principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And you go there now, you'll get a server error. I am trying to fix that. There's something wrong with the one of the files, and I'm trying to figure out which one. In any case, I will probably continue to do something on that site. If you want to get a hold of me, by the way, if you want to complain or you want to pat me on the back, you want to give me a kick in the behind, you can do it by email. My email is chairman@principledpolicy.com. That's chairman@principledpolicy.com. And send me an email and tell me I'm a bum. Gosh, you get in line. All this to say, I praise the Lord for the vision of Rick Finke and WLRY. I give I praise the Lord for Mike O'Reilly, who has been supportive and understanding when there were mistakes were made with the program, because that did happen over Thanksgiving. I made a special Thanksgiving. I made a special Thanksgiving program, and I thought I had sent it out, and what I ended up sending out was a program from, I think, 2019, something like that. And I called Mike and I said, well, there's a problem. No big deal. Mike always, you may have heard it and said, what's this program about? This is like 4 or 5 years old. Yeah, you're right. Because I foolishly clicked the wrong button. But in any case, God bless Rick Finke and his memory. And God bless his family for giving him the resources to do WLRY. And God bless Mike O'Reilly for stepping in and being the station manager. And God bless all the people who've been on WLRY and those who've listened. As we go into the Christmas season, and obviously you're hearing this on Saturday, Christmas is on Wednesday. So Merry Christmas. I'm not going to say Happy Holidays. Sorry. Jesus is the reason for the season. And may you have a blessed Christmas with your family and with your friends. And may God bless you and keep you. Just enjoy the Christmas season. Again, come see us on Christmas Eve in Pataskala, Providence Presbyterian Church, 7095 Summit Road, 7 p.m. on Christmas Eve, and join us for our service. Okay, that being said, you know, I brought up some of this. We've kind of talked about this with my abortion rant and my other things I've done on this program. You know that I have been talking a lot, and I did a complete show on this last week on the Christian worldview, developing a Christian worldview, actually having a Christian worldview, because nobody has a perfect Christian worldview. We are all tainted by the world. You can't escape it. We all have tendencies where things of the world creep in. Nobody lived the perfect life except Jesus, and he lived it for us so that we would be, our righteousness comes from him, so that we can approach God directly. We can go to the throne directly through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, through the administration of the Holy Spirit. That's the bottom line on a Christian worldview. Does the world view it this way? Well, of course not. Does even the church necessarily view it this way? No, that's what theological liberalism is. It is a rejection of the deity of Christ and the idea that there's a God in heaven who can only be approached through the Son, through the administration of the Holy Spirit. So, in other words, the Trinity. Very often liberal churches reject the Trinity, Unitarians. Very often modern churches have rejected the idea of the Trinity. They've rejected the idea of the divinity of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is a great teacher, and you will be taught from the pulpit about Christ's quote-unquote philosophy. They'll read from the Bible, but they don't teach that Christ was the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity. They don't teach that. They teach that Christ was a great teacher. Okay, how does that affect, because culture is downstream from religion, what effect does that have on the culture of the folks who are, remember, culture, we tend to think of culture, we tend to think of American culture, okay? And let's talk about that for a minute. What is American culture? Well, really, there is no such thing. Every place has its own culture. Now, they all blend together, and like, for instance, if we go to the Southwest, I have in-laws who are descendants from the Spanish who came in the 1500s. Do they? And they live in New Mexico, and they have a vastly different culture than we have here in Ohio. They think in terms of ranching and mining and those kinds of things. We think in terms of farming and manufacturing and those kinds of things. They're in California. It's a vastly different culture than in Ohio. In the Southeast, vastly different culture than in Ohio. Now, we share enough cultural elements with those cultures that we can go there. We can speak the same language. Sometimes we're a little dumbfounded. They'll say something as if we understand what they're talking about, and we say things here as if they understand what we're talking about, and they don't. Why? Because they live in a different culture. Not vastly different. Not as different as, say, us and the Middle East, or in Ohio and Egypt, or India, or Japan, name of Russia. But we have enough understanding of different cultures that we can more or less figure out what's happening. There are things that are mysterious to us. There are things that are mysterious to Western Europeans that Eastern Europeans understand just fine. There are things that go on in Louisiana because they are from a different cultural background than the rest of the United States. Louisiana and other places, parts of Alabama, come out of French culture. Those were French possessions. And much of the culture grew up out of that. And then later, and this is interesting, kind of. You may not think so. later, those were Spanish possessions, and then they passed back to the French. So, and then, of course, they ended up being part of the United States. Well, they maintain bits and pieces of that culture. That's why they have Mardi Gras in both New Orleans and in Mobile, Alabama. By the way, the first modern parades, the celebrations of Mardi Gras started in Mobile, not in New Orleans. And they're kind of proud of that. I'm not sure why. Sure, it's a big party, but it's also unfortunately devolved into debauchery. And again, that is a cultural thing. So how did it get that way? Well, you have different cultural expressions that come out of different belief systems. For instance, in Ohio, we are largely derived from we're a frontier, and the only real religion that came in on the frontier was the Methodists. So this is heavily Methodist territory. Of course, there were Catholics here, and there were Presbyterians here, and there were other denominations here. But we are a more of a Methodist stronghold. In the Northeast, they were Congregational. In Virginia, they were more Episcopalian. So there are all kinds of cultural implications that come from that. Rhode Island. Rhode Island was always more of a free-for-all, if you will, a religious free-for-all. They had open, if you were a religious oddball, quote-unquote, from other colonies, you could come to Rhode Island and be comfortable. And that plays out in their culture. Sorry, having a sip of tea there. Yes, I do that. Keeps my voice going in during a time when we all have colds and runny noses and those kinds of things. Okay. So let's look at how we deal with certain things. For instance, we've just had an election, which was sort of a sweep. The House, the Senate, the presidency of the United States. How did that happen? Did we have a cultural shift? Yeah, we had a cultural shift. We're in the middle of a cultural shift right now. If you're not paying attention, what's going on right now is a major cultural shift. People are becoming, I don't know if you'd call it more conservative. That's not really correct. We're becoming more libertarian. And you may say, well, what's the difference? There's a big difference, because conservatives, at least by my definition, and you can have a different definition, conservatives essentially tend to be Christian or Jewish. Not necessarily, although there are politically conservative Muslims as well, and Buddhists and other things. But the conservatives I'm thinking about, again, culture downstream from religion, and politics downstream from culture. And that's kind of where I'm going with this. Our culture is shifting, and therefore our politics is shifting. Now, if you talk to most people, a great number of people who probably voted, you know, I'm not asking you to go out and do a survey. Who'd you vote for? Frankly, when people approach me like that, I'm like, well, it's none of your business. But you folks in here know who we generally support. Barry and I were very open about who we supported and who we didn't. I voted for instance, my congressman, even though I don't like him very much. He's a follow-along guy. He's the kind of guy who goes along to get along. He'd like to... After two or three terms, he'd like to start getting some chairmanships, and therefore he goes along with leadership no matter what they want to do. The guy who preceded him, Pat Tiberi, was the ultimate log roller. And still rolls logs, from a different place. He's no longer in Congress. He does it as a lobbyist. And that's an issue that if I had more shows to do, we could talk about that. But the fact is that, if you ask the average Joe, who he voted for, and let's say he says Donald Trump, what cultural inferences can you make? Well, not necessarily any, because Donald Trump is a figure that appeals to a broad range of people with a broad range of issues that they're worried about. And not all of them are conservative. All of them realize that the current occupant of the White House, Joe Biden, is not mentally competent. And really, it's coming out now, it's being admitted to, that he hasn't been competent the entire term. That essentially... they're saying now that, well, he has good days and he has bad days. And, well, apparently he has lots and lots of bad days, because some of the policy stuff that's coming out has come out of that administration. And some of the people who ended up, and by the way, confirmed by at times majority Republicans in the Senate and should never have been confirmed. Nonetheless, some of the appointments that he's made, some of the things he's done, pardoning his son with a blanket pardon that goes back 11 years. Why did he do that? Because his corruption goes back that far with his son. Are these established facts? No, they're not. But the fact is that Joe Biden is corrupt as the day is long. He's been taking bribes through his son from Ukraine, and you can see some of the activity in that's gone on in Ukraine, Russia, China, other places where his son had his absolutely zero expertise in gas production, and yet was put on the board of Burisma for a huge amount of money. Well, what was it? It was influence peddling, because at the time, Joe Biden was Vice President of the United States, and then they bought influence, and he later became President of the United States, and has used his influence to try to keep us, get us in a war. I'll be quite honest, Joe Biden has done his best to get us into a war, either with Iran or with Ukraine. Now, if you talk to people on the street and they tell you they voted for Joe Biden, you can ask them what were the reasons? Well, the reason, and it's all nebulous. Just as a lot of the Trump voters are nebulous, it's nebulous. They think what they'll tell you, I voted for Joe Biden because Donald Trump's a racist. Laughable. A laughable assertion. Donald Trump's a potential dictator. My gosh, folks, were you alive? Were these people alive during COVID when we were lied to over and over and over and over and over and over again and forced to do things that were restrictive and absurd? There are interesting things going on culturally inside churches. I have a friend, I just discovered this. I watched a podcast the other day that I follow on YouTube, and here was my friend Dave Whitney. I did not know Dave Whitney, who's Evangelical Free Church in America, a Reformed congregation. He had been defrocked. Why? Because he wouldn't close his church during COVID. So I'm going to try to contact him. If I can, I'll set up an interview. I will see what happens. Dave's, I'm sure, a busy guy. But here he is, and I had no idea. But we, states tried to force people to close, and some people, some churches fell right into line and did it and cited Romans 13 as their reason. Boy, have we talked about that. We beat that horse nearly to death. But the horse isn't dead, so it should be beaten some more. The fact is that the state had no jurisdiction to close churches. There was an effort to keep our, we closed for 5 weeks at Providence Presbyterian. We closed for about 5 weeks. And after the fifth week, I realized that we were being lied to, and the other elders realized we were being lied to, and we opened the church back up immediately. Now, did everybody come? No. We set up a method for those who had bought the propaganda and didn't want to. There were people who legitimately shouldn't have been there. I mean, we lost an elder to the pandemic. I've talked about him before, Tom Steele. We lost him to the pandemic, and we lost him to what? We lost him to the deadly therapy that was being forced on hospitals. They'll tell you, people will tell you, oh no, it was all voluntary. No, it wasn't. There was funding for the hospitals that was attached, and what happened was essentially they came out with this protocol where people, once their people's oxygen levels got below a certain state, they would be put on not just the oxygen, you know, through a tube in their nose. They would be put on a ventilator, the breathing machine, and they would be pumped them full of this drug that was supposed to wipe out the virus and did no such thing. It simply wiped out everybody's biological systems. All the bodily systems got wiped out by this drug called Remdesivir. We did our best to try to get Tom out of the hospital, and at the end, my wife got to see him. I did not get to get in because she was comforting his wife, and she went in the hotel, in the hospital room, and he was unrecognizable. Why? Because of this protocol that essentially killed all but the very few. The mortality rate on this protocol was over 90%. They try to claim that was because, well, these people were so sick. No, Tom was ill, and Tom was very ill, but he could have recovered if given the proper protocol. And by the way, the proper protocol was hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. That drug worked. Those two drugs, ivermectin probably more so, and it's it was called all kinds of things. It was it's deadly, it's dangerous. You're spreading false hope. And no, people who were observant understood. Ivermectin is a drug that gets used to treat this tropical disease called dengue fever. And it turned out that in areas where dengue fever is given oftentimes prophylactically, and the same with hydroxychloroquine, the COVID infections were at an absolute minimum, and when people got them, it wasn't that bad. Why? Because it worked to ward off the virus and to treat the virus. It worked. Now, what did they do? They tried to force us all to get vaccinations. There are those of us, my son-in-law, who was entering the Coast Guard at the time, forced to take this vaccination. It is now, I looked at the VAERS pie chart recently. VAERS, V-A-E-R-S, vaccine, VAERS. It's basically how they keep track of vaccine adverse reporting something system. It's how they report adverse events related to vaccines. And yeah, there are lots of them, folks. Now, I looked at the pie chart recently, and what you could see was that over 50% of the deaths associated with vaccines reported during this period since COVID, over 50% were COVID-19 vaccines. Young people continue to drop dead from unknown heart ailments. Now, some of these are legitimate. There are kids that have heart defects that aren't, you know, I don't want to say 100% of everybody who's dropping dead at a young age. But one of the things I remember as a biochemist was reading in the 80s some work being done on messenger RNA, mRNA, messenger RNA, which is the basis for most of the vaccines, the COVID-19 vaccines. They were doing experiments with it as an alternative approach to cancer, a new type of chemotherapy. And they were doing a clinical study on mRNA to try to trick the body into recognizing the cancer as what it is, an invader, abnormal, so that it would kill it off. And essentially what they did was they had to stop the clinical study because a huge percentage, I don't remember the numbers because I had read the paper years ago, a huge percentage died of either the cancer took off like a wildfire, or the people were dying of mysterious circulatory problems. So a huge number of the people on the clinical study died, so enough so that they said, okay, that's enough, we're putting this away. So they brought it back out as a vaccine. Well, what happened? Folks, there has been a spike in all kinds of deaths caused by, nobody will say this. There seems to be a correlation with taking the vaccine and having increased amounts of cancer and circulatory and organ failure. Organ failure, circulatory problems causing organ failure. You can laugh and poo-poo and say all kinds of things if you want to, but the fact is that the government affected the culture. They talked the culture into the idea that if you don't take, what were the threats? If you don't take this thing, and I still see the ads to this day, if you get COVID-19, then Everyone will be lonely because you're not there. They're not claiming that COVID-19 will kill you anymore. It still will, but you have to be very, 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 very sick. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the people that died were all immune compromised. I got COVID-19 and I got really sick, but I'm not immune compromised and my body threw it off. My wife got it. She got really sick. She's not immune compromised. Her body threw it off. We were lied to repeatedly. It was sold that if you don't get the vaccine, then you are the person who killed somebody in your office. If we were working in an office, so many offices went to work at home, if they could, or stores that were closed and forced people out of business. Nonetheless, you were told that if you didn't take the vaccine, you were killing someone or making them ill or damaging them for life. You were the bad guy. And that's the way it was portrayed. And don't kid yourself. It's still talked about to this day. Fauci would still like to spread that myth. Dr. Fauci, who I would not want to be him in the upcoming Congress. Because, yes, he retired. He was forced into retirement for obvious reasons. Now, we've got people coming in who are going to seriously look into the people who were in charge. And remember, this, we started out talking about why people voted for Biden. They liked what he did during the pandemic. Some of them didn't like it, but they understood it. Some of them like, remember, we talked about, well, it's because Donald Trump's a fascist. Who was a fascist? Biden was. And who else were fascists? Governors were. In Ohio, our governor took the word of a, frankly, Amy Acton, a pro-abort, who had no business being the national or the state health director. And yet somehow she ended up in the office, probably at the behest of some of DeWine's, Governor DeWine's liberal Republican advisors. I can think of people who probably guided him to appoint her. This is a woman who essentially, after many, I think, reopened an abortion clinic, a butcher shop, got it reopened as state health director. This is unconscionable. And then came out and told us all, if you remember, oh gosh, do you remember the press conferences where she would come out and make these grandiose statements that were false, simply false lies. She knew they were lies. And yet they had to get us to comply with this thing. They had to shut down schools. They had to shut down businesses. They had to shut down churches to save us all, which most of us realized was a lie just a few weeks in. Some people took the bait and swallowed it whole. And to this day, I still see people. I was in a place, oh gosh, I think I was in a lumber store, and here were two women wearing masks still. There are still people wearing masks to protect themselves. There was a journalist named Taylor Lorenz who still, she's been fired from multiple jobs. You may have heard of her. She doxes people. What does that mean? She finds out people she doesn't like. And they're all, virtually all conservative. She finds out people who are supposedly controversial. She doesn't like them. And she prints their home addresses and their names and their phone numbers and that kind of thing if she can get a hold of it. Folks, there are crazy people out there. And again, this is a cultural thing. And it's a downstream from religion. What do I mean by that? When people are crazies. There are some people who are just mentally unbalanced, period. Other people, their worldview informs them that it's okay to do things that should not be done. In other words, this fellow who assassinated this head of United Health Group in New York City, laid in wait for him, knew he was going to be there, planned his attack for weeks, shot the man in the back and as he passed him. He thinks he was in the right to do that. He thinks it was okay to do that. He points to things that United Health Group, and I'll be the first to tell you, I don't like United Health Group. I don't like United Healthcare. I had them at one point as healthcare. They're awful. And do they make life difficult for people who are sick and need treatment? Do they often sometimes delay treatment to the point where people die and then they breathe a sigh of relief because they don't have to pay for what may cost $300,000 in very expensive chemotherapies and surgeries and all kinds of specialized treatment? Yeah, they do that. What do I think about that? I think it's criminal. And do I think the CEO was a criminal? Yeah, it appears he was involved in insider trading. That means pharmaceutical company trading, healthcare company trading, hospital group trading, that kind of thing. And I also think he was head of a company that routinely turned down legitimate claims. Do I think he sat in his office and rubber stamped the turning down? No, he had people working for him that did that, and he knew it was going on. Don't kid yourself. Does that mean that I think that a vigilante then is allowed to go through and shoot him in the back? No, I do not. I do not. The man should have been charged and the company investigated, and regulators come down on them like the Lord comes down on those who blaspheme him. I'm not saying it was a blasphemy, but God does come down on those who mock him and blaspheme him, and the regulators should have come down on that company like that, and that guy should probably have been in jail, not just him, many of his executives. But I don't think a vigilante should have been empowered to shoot him in the back. What do we see, though, in our current culture? I've seen this in Christian circles. People who claim to be Christian, the guy was justified in murdering that healthcare exec and thereby implying that other healthcare executive, it should be okay to murder them. Now, did the state let him by? No, they didn't. But it's odd to me that New York, to get him back out of Pennsylvania, because he fled to Pennsylvania, this fellow, Luigi Mangione, in an extradition hearing. What does that mean? Every state, if you're captured in a state on a warrant from another state, you have to be extradited, which means you have to get a hearing, and he was fighting it. And he gave up fighting it, but what did New York charge him with? They charged him with second-degree murder. Well, second-degree murder is a charge that you use when someone, in the heat of passion, not out of planning, in the heat of passion, simply gets angry, sees red, kills somebody. That's a second-degree murder charge. A first-degree murder charge is premeditated. In other words, they thought about it, they planned it out, they went at it rationally, and killed somebody. Well, it turns out that second-degree murder charge may have been just simply to get the extradition underway, because in New York, a grand jury has indicted Luigi Mangione for first-degree murder. So I thought we were going to see an attempt, and we may still see this, to ameliorate the charge, bring it down a notch, out of understanding for the sentiment of this, because you don't have to go very far. Remember, I mentioned Taylor Lorenz, who had been fired and was one of the people who was insanely attached to the narrative on the COVID vaccine, and still is, by the way. She came out and was writing laudatory editorials She worked until recently for Vox, which is an ultra-left website. She came out and wrote laudatory editorials praising Luigi Mangione, and she's not alone. There are a number of people who are out there. I've seen it on YouTube. I've seen it on numerous places. People talking about Luigi Mangione as a folk hero. He is a deranged murderer. Flat out. He is a deranged murderer. Part of the accoutrements he had in his bag, his big plan was to shoot this guy in the back, you know, kill him, and then cover him in Monopoly money. He had a bag full of Monopoly money that he discarded in the park while he was escaping. So culturally, where are we on that? We have people who are sympathetic with the sentiment, okay? As a Christian, we shouldn't be sympathetic with that sentiment. And again, our politics should be that we should not be supportive of, and remember that criminal justice is part of our politics. How can that be? We elect judges, and if we don't elect judges, they're appointed by those who we do elect, and we should be looking at electing people, if they're, you've got an appointed judgeship, electing people who will appoint the right type of the judges who will fairly administer justice. And if we have elected judges, then we need to elect judges who will administer justice fairly. And that means that you don't look away while people commit murder. Now, there's a case down in Kentucky where a sheriff shot a judge in his chambers. More and more and more and more is coming out about what has gone on in that county. And remember that one of the sheriff's deputies had went to jail for this offense, for this. This is proven in a court. But now it's turning out that the judge who was murdered was involved in a scheme to trade sexual favors for lenient treatment or for a dismissal of cases. More and more and more is going to come out. This is a worldview issue, folks. A good judge does not trade sexual favors for better treatment. It just simply isn't done. Now, again, this sheriff's deputy went to jail exactly for doing that, and in some cases doing it in that judge's chamber, in his office. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not a Christian thing to do. And in a Christian culture, downstream from our belief and downstream from that culture that we create in politics, are Christians in charge of the culture? No, we are not. We are players in the culture. And unfortunately, what we have been doing is subtracting ourselves out of the culture. Or adopting the culture. Why? To get along. There's a very incorrect idea that somehow you bring people into the church by adopting their culture and kowtowing to what they want to get them to come to your church. In other words, you water down the gospel, you water down the teaching, you water down the approach and say almost anything goes to get them in the door. My wife always used to say, we used to talk about this. We still talk about this. She goes, this is all well and good. All happy and your life will be better and blah, blah, blah. When do you hit them with the fact that God will judge you based on, you know, what you believe about Christ, how you have a relationship with Christ and with the Father and with the Holy Spirit? You'll be judged on that, and it can be harsh. When do we hit them with the fact that life may not get better with Christ? It may get worse. Why? Because you may be persecuted. When do we hit them with that? Those are the kind of people, unfortunately, I'm sad to say, there are a lot of Christians who call them, people who call themselves Christians, who in the light of the first wave of minor persecution, which we are kind of seeing now. We're seeing that in our current culture. We Christians, all we have to do is take a look at Christian school shootings. And that's kind of where I wanted to go today. I'm running out of time real fast. But Christian school shootings. This case in Madison, Wisconsin that just happened. A young, very young girl, sadly very young, 17 years old, goes in, shoots people in her school, and then shoots herself and killed one classmate. Not the same age. This girl was 17. And a substitute teacher who was there because the teacher was on vacation. Okay, we don't know why she did it, but I can tell you this. It's become very obvious that this person, while attending a Christian school, and this happens sometimes, attending a Christian school, was not a Christian. And her parents, her home life was an absolute train wreck. That's not a Christian value, folks. Now, I'm speaking as someone who has been divorced. I had no children, and I was married for a very short time. My current wife and I have been married for going on 39 years. We've been together for 41 years. And we have 3 children and 6 grandchildren. Our home life is very stable. My mother-in-law lives in an apartment in our basement, and we take care of her, my wife and I do, and we were building an apartment for my mother. That's a very stable environment. Unfortunately, this girl doesn't have that. Father and mother both divorced and remarried. The girl had to go through therapy. Had to go through therapy to decide who she was going to live with. This is pretty sad, folks. And the fact is, it's appearing that this girl in Madison, Wisconsin, was co-conspiring with a man or a 20-year-old in California to do the same thing with explosives on the same day. And unfortunately, he appears to have come to his senses and said, "Nah, we can't do that." She was clearly deranged. Why was she deranged? I'm sure that she justified it in her own head. Culturally, I'm being forced into this culture that I don't fit into. You can't force people to fit into a culture. They have to decide to be part of that culture. And that comes downstream from religion. Was this girl a Christian? Did she believe? She did, apparently did not. Because if you adopt the Christian culture, that means you rever human life. That doesn't mean you're afraid to, I don't want to go too far afield, but that means you rever human life. We're not talking about the death penalty for an obvious crime. We're talking about looking at a human being. There are people you may strongly dislike, but that's not your duty to end their life. That part of the culture and the politics that's now coming out. Here's what we see coming out of this. Joe Biden, the first thing he said was, "We need to ban assault rifles," showing that he is really not mentally competent, because this girl did it with a pistol. Nobody knows where the pistol came from. Well, somebody knows, but nobody's talking about where the pistol came from. She did issue some kind of a manifesto. Nobody's talking about it. Let's hope it doesn't take with the Nashville Christian school shooter, who also graduated from that Christian school and had become a transgender, which that mental illness was involved in the decision. Remember that this was a girl who supposedly transitioned into a boy. It's dress-up play. A girl cannot transform into a guy, and a guy cannot transform into a girl. It's genetic. Sorry, folks. XX is girl. XY is boy. Okay, well, guess what? I'm out of time. I hope you understand where I'm going. Remember, culture is downstream from religion, and politics is downstream from culture. Keep that in mind when you analyze things going on. Okay, you know what I think. I want to know what you think. Get a hold of me at chairman@principledpolicy.com. That's chairman at principledpolicy.com. Keep going over to principledpolicy.com and taking a look, because I will get that fixed. Join me again next week for the last episode of Principles and Policies.